Okay, so our next speaker is Zuko. Not sure exactly how to introduce him since he goes by two names and seemingly randomly. He's presenting Mnet, which is the new branch of Mojo Nation. Anyhow, here's Zuko.
Yes, my name is Zuko today. It was heads. So that was a good joke Darius made at the beginning of his presentation about just-in-time speakers. And I just did some just-in-time compiling. There's only one Ethernet cable here, and Darius was using it, so I had to wait till he was done before I could download the source code onto this box and compile it. I'm having a video display problem. My It says perfecting the image. Perfect. Okay, so. Okay, so the make completed. I'm going to have to look over my shoulder because I don't have a display on here. So I'll see what happens. I've never run it on this box. And in fact, this... Oh, it failed. That problem means... That problem has to do with the standard C++ library that's installed on this machine. So I don't think I want to debug it while standing up here. I don't know the obvious solution. So that's a good idea. All I need is X forwarding. Thanks. X forwarding. So dash cap X. Okay, so I'm going to try to multitask and talk to you while I'm doing this. This is the Mnet project, M-N-E-T. And it's the open source anarchic successor project to a product named Mojo Nation. A lot of you have probably heard of Mojo Nation. It was quite the pioneering product. Mojo Nation was developed by a company called Evil Geniuses for a Better Tomorrow over the course of about 2 years. And at the end of last year, they spun off the whole thing as an open source project, which means, in particular, that the company itself doesn't exert any control over where it goes. And now a lot of the code is, well, all of the code that's been contributed in the last few months has been from independent hackers in various places, different countries too, which can be important, I guess. So, Mojo Nation was originally envisioned by Jim McCoy, who's here today, as a distributed data haven. So the basic idea is just the data haven that you might have read about in, say, Bruce Sterling's Islands in the Net or something like that. And the distributed means that it's composed of computers which may individually be, subject to a given jurisdiction. But because of some emergent property of the network, it acts like a perfectly free locale. And Mojo Nation was also two other things. It was a distributed data haven. It was a product like Napster that was based on that technology. And then there was the observation that if you are using resources on someone's computer, you need to have a way to persuade them to let you do that. A lot of the modern file sharing apps have this habit of using your resources, persuading you by not telling you. It's called spyware. And in some cases, that's just to generate demographic information for the person. Oh, I don't want to don't want to slam anyone too hard, but I recently read that United Devices Cancer Research Project, I read this in the register.co.uk, the cancer research project that people had signed up for had been silently switched from researching cancer to researching anthrax. And some of the people who had wanted to contribute to cancer research were peeved about that. But I digress. So there was the third thing that Mojo Nation was, which was if you're going to use the computational resources of these nodes in the service of other nodes, there should be some reason that the owner of the original node cooperates with this. And so Mojo Nation incorporated a Chomian blindable digital token system on, as well as everything else. Now, almost all of the source code that was made for Mojo Nation was open source from the beginning. It was always released under the lesser GNU public license, except for the token server and some other pieces that are not germane. I'll get totally in a second. But regarding digital cash, it was always the case that the token server that signed, could put a digital signature on these blinded tokens, was a proprietary property of the Evil Geniuses company. And that's still the case. However, the MNET nodes that I'm going to demo, if I can get this SSH forwarding to work, can use that token server if the company continues to make it available to them. I'm going to turn that off so I can see it. Yeah, thanks. So that was about what Mojo Nation was. The company, Evil Geniuses for a Better Tomorrow, is continuing to pursue commercialization of the technology. In particular, they have a combination of this open source software, which is under the LGPL, which means you're allowed to do this. Oh, and also it's mostly owned by them since they originally wrote it, which is another reason they're allowed to do it. And they have some other proprietary components of their own, which collectively make an enterprise backup peer-to-peer product. So that's what they're doing. And there's a handful of hackers around the world that are working on MNET just because they like the idea. Aha, I typed the IP address incorrectly. And so what MNET is now and what it's going to be might be slightly different. In particular, I'm the leader of the MNET project, and I have a particular idea of technical architecture that I want you guys to know about because it closely involves you. My idea is that there's going to be three strata of code, and this code already exists, and for the most part, the missing pieces have to do with documentation. Darius, the person who was on here before me, mentioned that he was considering using some of the MNET code for the encryption and communication part of his app. That's the first piece of MNET that I'm trying to get other people to use. It's called Evil Geniuses Transport Protocol, which can be pronounced EGTIP. And it's a messaging system which its most novel property is that it can bypass firewalls of any kind, almost, by dint of message store and forward. Because it was always the case from the beginning that I have to remember my password. Yeah, I know. I don't want everyone to see where I'm logging in or something. No, actually, the thing is that I can't see. I can only display it there or here. And so you can either see this in my face or the text in the back of my head for now. So there's this library that we have, which it has been in use in Mojo Nation and MNET for almost 2 years now, and we've recently extracted it and made it usable through an API for other projects. It's called EGTIP. It was named by Bram, who just popped onto the stage, and originally written by Bram. And The one of the major features of Eggtip is that it can bypass firewalls, which is really important for peer-to-peer apps. We observed when running Mojo Nation, which had a lot of users over both at any one time and over the months, that about a third of them were unable to receive incoming TCP connections. My guess is that that ratio will get worse in terms of there being a larger fraction of people using who want to use your peer-to-peer app who can't receive incoming TCP connections. Eggtip solves that. It does so by asking a third node to store messages and forward them for you. And so that once again raises the question of why is he doing that on your behalf? So that's really an open question. I mean, Darius mentioned erights.org and the Digital Silk Road paper from Agorix. And there's been a lot of really good ideas, including, in my opinion, the ideas that were implemented in Mojo Nation. But I haven't seen it really blow the roof off by being a great success yet. If you're doing any kind of peer-to-peer app in which some nodes are doing services on behalf of another node, it doesn't have to be computation sharing. Even if you look at something simple like file sharing, there's the question of why do I allow my node to send files to other people in addition to allowing it to retrieve files on my behalf? In my opinion, the reason that works is that people like to share their music. But that doesn't apply to other things you might want to do, always. How much time do I have? I didn't bring my watch. I'm going to demo installing MNET while trying to talk simultaneously. So there's three. The question was, what does MNET do right now? There's these three pieces. One is the Eggtip messaging system that I mentioned. The second is an API which I call a universal file space. There's an API that says, put this file. And there's no other arguments but the file or a handle to the file or something. But you just put the file, and it returns to you a unique name for that file in the universal file space. And then there's one other function in the API called get the file associated with this unique name. And it already does that as well. Both of these are things it already does. The third thing that MNET is a file sharing app like Napster, which is built on top of these other two components. And that's what I would be demoing. So that has, in addition to the get and put feature, it has a search by keyword kind of feature for people to use. It's not ready for millions of dumb users to use yet.
Would you like some help while you install?
Yeah, that'd be cool. Why don't you...
Do we have any other questions about this talk? Hello, can you hear me?
Nope. You can use this one.
I'll use this one.
This
right.
is Drew.
Howdy.
He's a hacker who knows how this stuff works. He worked at Mojo Nation, and he's helping here.
So we have any other questions about how MNET works?
Can I answer that question? That's a good question.
He asked, MNET is going to do some things that Mojo Nation didn't do, or what are the differences, basically?
That's a good question.
Would you like me to answer so you can keep installing? Some of the main things that MNET are doing differently than Mojo Nation is, for now, because the token server was proprietary property of the Evil Geniuses, currently, MNET has sort of abandoned the resource exchange system for now, I think, Zuko?
Yeah,
yes.
You can use it if you can use it, but...
Right now, you can't really use it. But the token server is fairly straightforward, and I don't think it would take a serious amount of effort to duplicate what the Evil Geniuses already had. So definitely the option is open for that type of thing in the future. I think that's like the main difference right now between MNet and Mojo Nation. It's getting dependence off of the parts of Mojo Nation that are intentionally dependent on the on Evil Geniuses.
I want to tell you a couple more things. One is that Mojo Nation, not so much intentionally, but sort of accidentally, had a central point of failure. There's a really fundamental issue called original introduction, which is when you turn on your computer and you install this software, and it doesn't know any other nodes yet. It can't ask any of the nodes it knows to find other nodes because it doesn't know any nodes. So there's this fundamental problem of how do you meet the first node. And in Mojo Nation, that was a central solution. And in MNet, there are several independently operated alternative original introducers, and you can use any subset of them. So that's already better.
Is that boot pages?
Yeah, and meta trackers. And there's one other thing, which is that MNet is being more widely used by other hackers. There are several people that are already using it, using components in their other projects.
Another question. Any more questions? He asked if there was the possibility in the future that there would be double-blinded digital tokens. And distributed in nature. So that would that mean multiple issuing institutions? What's that? I think he's talking about decentralized token management. Well, part of the problem with decentralizing token management is that you need a way to know what a valid token is and what isn't. And pretty much all of the digital cash systems involve some sort of online clearing. You have to know if a token's spent already. The solution isn't, you can't really distribute the validation of the tokens for a particular class of tokens, but what you can do is have multiple classes of tokens that each have independent public keys that are used for verifying them. But then you have this additional problem of exchange rates between different tokens, and that's a whole big ball of wax there.
Yes, Zuko?
What he said is all correct. It's very complicated, and I personally am not working on that. I'm working on making the other parts of MNet work well. So
distributing the tokens is very hard. Do we have other questions? Yes. Files are uniquely identified by the hash of their content, so that gives you a global unique identifier without a centralized identity clearinghouse. Oh, the question was how do we implement decentralized global unique IDs?
Drew, there's actually two parts to that. There's the unique ID, which is a SHA-1 hash of the file. The other part is the searching. How do you find data that you put into there? I think that may be actually the question that was, or the intent on that question.
How do you find data? Well, in Mojo Nation, and I believe this is continued in MNet. Actually, I'd rather hold on to this than the whole thing. In MNet, typically the metadata that describes files decoupled from the data itself. So basically you have a description of the data, and part of that includes the hash of the unique identifier for it. So searching would happen separate from the actual storage of the files. And in Mojo Nation, there were independent content trackers that were sort of all-purpose clearinghouses for any type of files. But I think now in MNet, we're moving towards sort of community-based searching where, let's say you want to operate a tracker that just a search database that only handles live fish concerts, for instance, you would operate that and then accept submissions and let people search for them. The idea is to let someone sort of take control over the databases for searching, or let people create their own databases for searching content in MNet that's sort of organized around a common theme instead of trying to have one global distributed database that has everything in it.
Does that sound about right, Zuko?
Yeah. It's Right now, there are, well, I checked last night when I was practicing for this, and there were 25 people who had downloaded and compiled the new MNET, and several of them were running content trackers. So I didn't count, but let's say 10 of them were running content trackers. So that's 10 separate nodes which answer SQL-type keyword queries. The answers they give you are the unique file names which are sufficient to download from the universal file space. That's the current state of affairs.
All right. Do you have some more questions?
Over there.
I don't understand the... with respect to the content searches, what kind of authenticity properties can you provide for the correspondence between keywords or whatever you're searching on and what it is that's looked up?
There really is no guarantee. That's a separate issue. There is a guarantee... Well... In the old MojoNation system, basically anyone was allowed to submit a content or a content description if they knew the hash of the content already. And things that we had planned were sort of like reputation-based systems where people could rate content. Perhaps we would have identities so that people could establish a reputation for accurately describing things. In MNET, I think because we're sort of moving towards people sort of owning each content domain, each search engine, we would expect them to be authentic or vetting each metadata description for accuracy or whatever parameters they thought were reasonable. So basically, instead of having sort of a free form system, we're sort of letting people take responsibility for their database of content. And if you wanted, you could run an open-ended content tracker and that didn't verify any of the metadata in it, but we're sort of encouraging people to take ownership of these metadata databases and perhaps, you know, hopefully they will ensure that there's high-quality metadata and that type of thing in it. So how about right there?
That sort of brings up another question of the metadata databases being legal to keep around or not.
Are the metadata databases kept around or not?
No, whether they're legal to keep or not.
Well, that's a big question, and I'm not a lawyer, so you should probably consult someone that's qualified to practice in your area. But
actually, tomorrow we have a panel on legality.
That's right.
Covering these issues.
So. Yes, and I think definitely pointing people to illegal things, saying that here's something that's illegal, this is how you get it. I think that's probably not a good position to be in, and that's probably. A major reason why, or not a major reason why, but a good reason why content trackers and metadata search engines were so decoupled from the data storage and also not operated by anybody working for Evil Geniuses for a Better Tomorrow during the original MojoNation setup. So definitely talk to your attorney.
I am not a lawyer, but I am running a metadata database.
Yes. Bitsy.
You could certainly use that. It would give you back the identifiers that if you're using standard SHA-1 identifiers for certain content. And we strongly believe that that is legal because we do not store the content, we do not transmit the content, we do not locate the content for you. We simply describe it in a sort of card catalog way. So it's a really interesting issue, and we're gonna either take that hit or not.
Right, because MojoNation uses SHA-1 hashes for identity, you can really use any sort of metadata searching system you want, including just putting the hashes up on a web page and letting Google search for them. That doesn't necessarily mean that the hashes for content that are placed into MNET are going to be comparable to hashes for content put into other systems, because the hash that you get back, the handle in MNET, isn't simply the hash of the data, but also the hash of the data after it's been broken up and mnetized. So,
so you're saying it's legal to be a hash distributor?
I'm not saying it's illegal to be a hash distributor, but that would be nice, yes.
Okay.
More questions. Yes, he asked if the mapping to create file IDs is canonical based on the content. Yes, except if any of the parameters, well, yes and no. If you use the same, like, and they were supposed to be, but in unfortunately, it is dependent on the way the data is broken up and made redundant before distribution. So if you change those parameters, for instance, you use a different threshold ratio for your error correction codes, then you'll get a different hash. So, yes, there we go. The answer is no, unless you don't change anything ever again. Any other questions?
Did you ever get any statistics from when you put the file and then when you ask for it back, how many times you actually get it back and how many times you don't, based on how many people there are, how long you've left it, and that kind of thing?
No, we don't really have any real actual statistics on how well MojoNation worked. We don't have any like real hardware numbers. Yes, it was 5 nines of reliability. It was amazing.
I observed some of the behavior of the MojoNation network, and there was a big problem with churn. With MojoNation was widely publicized, and there were I think there were 20,000 downloads per month, typically, of the software, and from SourceForge.net download site. And but a vast majority of these people would try it for a couple of minutes, and it wasn't satisfying to them, so they would turn it off. Now, the system had been designed just sort of implicitly thinking that we would have more like maybe 50% of the nodes would be sort of stable, but I think it was, I measured once, I've forgotten the number now, but it was a very small fraction of the nodes would even come back two times, right? The vast majority were only there once. That was a big problem. Hopefully, actually, MNET will be more stable by dint of being less widely used. Currently, like I said, I was using it last night, and there's these 25 people, and they went to the effort to compile it first, so they're less likely to just turn it off after 2 minutes of trying it.
One question is, perhaps there'd be value in letting people specify when they start up a node whether they intended to run it for a while or not.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Did you hear that? He said one possibility is that when people start it up, they could specify whether they intend to run it for a long time or not, and then you could discriminate between nodes based on their predicted uptime. It's a good idea.
Another thing, I haven't been able to find a specification of what that Mojo ID is. Is it specified anywhere outside the code?
No.
Okay. Well, I
suspect Mojo ID is the hash of the dynode, of course.
And the dynode is. Yeah, this is not helping people who want to help out, like us. I mean, we'd love to carry those IDs in our catalog, but yeah. We can't if.
So this is one of the things I want to do in the future, and it's a relatively easy one, so I might actually do it, which is write down that format. Also, I want to tweak it to make it simpler and better. And anyway, you know something about that stuff already. A lot of people do. Yeah.
One thing that we could do that would help a lot is when you, in our publish API, where you pass in the handle to the file and it returns the Mojo ID, it would probably be a good idea to return just the straight hash of the content itself, so you could have both of those in, like, for instance, the Bitsy catalogs. I think that would be, so don't forget that, Tsuko. Did you hear what I just said?
No, I wasn't.
I think it'd be a good idea to return
the hash of the file
itself along with the Mojo ID.
Is the default, the de facto standard. That should be
right.
That too.
But that's we don't use that for the handle to the file in MojoNation. What, excuse me?
It's possible to compute one from the other. I could write a 5-line Python script to take one and generate the other. Is that what you're asking? Okay. Yeah. So what you do is you download the file and then you run SHA-1 on it.
I think that the thing that makes Mojo IDs different here is that the format of them is dependent not of the Mojo ID is not just dependent on the data itself, but also in the way that the data is stored. And that's why because you can change, for instance, the redundancy of the information that before you distribute it, that necessarily changes the Mojo ID handle because it's a hash of the dynode, which is a list of the hashes of the pieces that make up the share map, which is a list of all the hashes of all the pieces that make up the file. So that,
so
it's like a big hash tree. Yes.
You guys can take this offline.
Okay.
Yeah,
so
that's question.
Zuko previously
next question.
Mentioned. Zuko previously mentioned that Mojonation used Chami and eCache for giving people reasons to do things on others' behalf. My understanding of the DigiCache-related patents is that's a really hairy and awful place to be. Did Evil Geniuses deal with that at all? Or
No, Evil Geniuses never implemented CHOM anything. We had RSA signed tokens.
Okay.
See, there's... So if you have an RSA signature on a token, then CHOM's patent covers multiplying that... well, it's a little bit more complicated, but it's basically multiplying and dividing that string by a randomly chosen number. Now, an interesting fact is that the server, if you do it right, if you do it the way we did, the server can't identify whether the client has multiplied this thing by a random number or not. That's all.
So if you live in a jurisdiction where Chomian blinding is not patented, then you could go ahead and put that in your client and you would get the benefits of that. But we wouldn't know anything about that. Yeah, he basically said it was impossible for the server to determine if a token has been blinded or not when he signs it, and that's true. Right. The Mojonation token system was set up in anticipation that at some point in the future, Chomian's techniques would no longer be patented, and then we could implement them, and we would be ready for that. But we didn't. We were careful not to tread on the patents themselves. There we go, the Barnes agnostic server.
Yeah, that technique was published by Doug Barnes, who was one of the founders of Mojonation, and it's called agnostic blindable tokens, something like that.
Just checking.
Crypto plus plus takes a long time to compile.
We have some more questions.
To handle a situation where all of a sudden certain content got really popular, you could then push it out to more, I forgot what they're called, the
block servers,
right. You could push it out to more block servers. In MNET, is there any facility to manage that so that when a piece of content gets really popular, more block servers will pick it up and carry it?
Currently, MNET is almost the same source code as Mojonation was 6 months ago with just incremental tweaks, notably a whole new GUI, but also just fixes and tweaks. So it's got the same behavior about dynamically responding to popularity of blocks.
Thanks.
More questions? They're all questions. Oh, there's one in the back. The question was, do unpopular blocks get dropped? Well, in...
block servers that stay up.
Well, the policy that's actually in there right now, I think, is least recently used policy. So, yes, unpopular drops.
The current policy is kind of funny. Some guy in Finland submitted the original policy was random replacement. When your block server's full, you throw out one random block on the principle that the redundancy throughout the whole net would make that work well. And it was easy to implement. Some guy in Finland submitted a more sophisticated replacement policy, I think least recently used or something. But I was concerned about the emergent behavior of everyone doing the same least recently used policy. So currently, when you install your MNET node, it flips a coin, and half of the time it's random, and half of the time it's that Finnish guy's policy.
I think one of the original plans in Mojo Nation was to implement some sort of lease-based policy where you could pay more of the internal Mojo tokens to have block servers hold on to your block longer, or you would hope that they would hold it on to longer. Obviously, there's no guarantees. But I don't think that was never actually implemented. So that also opens up a lot of cans of worms, too.
Wouldn't it be very hard to enforce, like, if you pay people to hold your blocks and then they drop them, there's nothing really you can do to them?
Yes. Right. You're exactly right. And that's why we have this thing called risk management and redundancy. So you don't, and also the plan was to use reputation mechanisms. The idea being if we create incentives for brokers to be honest, then they would get more business. Any other questions?
We've heard a lot of talk about how, with distributed networking, if we chop the things into small enough pieces of the process, and you do this and I'll do this, and if we did that together, we'd be illegal. But, you know, if we all split it out, any particular piece isn't. Are we going to have to do distributed disobedience along with our distributed networking?
I don't necessarily think that was the original goal of Mojo Nation, to have things spread out in order to avoid liability, unless you just didn't want to have it on your computer at all.
You were hinting about that.
Who was hinting? Me? You know, I can't really say whether we're going to have to engage in distributed disobedience, but I think, I'm not sure. I'm not a lawyer. Next question.
We've got about 10 minutes.
Okay, how's that coming? Oh, man.
Let's talk about it. As was true originally with Mojo Nation and still with MNET, there's a... As was true originally with Mojo Nation and still with MNET, the blocks of data are encrypted by the clients, and the block servers don't have the key, unless, of course, they're also acting as the client in that instance. So, as a matter of fact, it's impossible for the block servers to discriminate among blocks of data based on the content, except, of course, in the case that they're also acting as clients for those blocks.
Well, the one thing I was going to add to that was the if you publish data and don't make the metadata public, then nobody can tell which blocks belong to that file. Unless you start downloading them, then people can do correlation. But even if, because the blocks are encrypted, even if by using statistical techniques an attacker determined which blocks belong to which file, they can't just put them back together. They still need the encryption keys, which are stored in the share map. So, in that part, you can't get the share map unless you have the hashes for the pieces that make up the share map, which are in the DI node, and that's what's stored in the metadata. Excuse me?
Sarcastically.
Right,
that,
yeah, no, you're exactly right. I wasn't the one who originally planned it out all the time, but yes, an application is a distributed data haven, yes.
What do you see as a real incentive for more than 25 people to use this thing if it's not illegal? I mean, what is the main incentive for
Storing data is perfectly legal.
No, but what do you see as incentive for more than 25 people that are currently using the system to use your stuff? How do you get 5,000 people to use this? What is the real-world incentive for them to join if it's not illegal? That's what I'm asking.
It's not illegal?
Yeah, I mean, the only thing that you can offer as incentive is to offer them protection from some other thing, right?
Not necessarily. Some of the benefits that MnET offers is because it makes data available to other people without you having to host it directly. And it doesn't matter. But now, hang on a second. Yeah, you're implying that any sort of data sharing is illegal or copyright infringement. That's not true.
What I'm saying is that modernation essentially failed. And I'm asking, why will this be a success? And the only incentive I can see is if you offer people something, a service in value, and value is protection from the law. And I cannot see anything data haven can do other than protection from the law.
That's not true. Okay, I just said, and one of the values that MNET brings, aside from protection for the law, is being able to host data or being able to make data available to other people without having to provide the resources to provide it. So if I wanted to allow people to record, or excuse me, to download some recordings I made of myself playing the guitar, you definitely don't want to hear any of these, which is perfectly legal, and there's quite a bit of other examples too. For instance, people that trade Grateful Dead and Phish live concerts have very large, there's a lot of people that want to download them, and it takes a lot of bandwidth to support that, especially because the people that trade them use lossless compression. But Mojonation had that, but that.
So I do like his answer about file sharing communities that have legal content, but there's three levels of MNET. The messaging system called EGTIP, which lots of people could use to send messages. There's a universal file space in which you can get and put files, and then there's this file sharing GUI that we're going to demo in a second, I think. But my point is, I'm really hoping that people here and people like you think to yourself in the shower tomorrow or something, oh, if I had a universal file space, I could do something with it. Let's have the next. It's a good objection. It's a very good question. But what I'm saying is I'm having fun making it do this stuff, and other people are. Six other people, I think, are hacking on it right now. And hopefully more people will. I don't know. There's probably some really cool stuff that'll happen.
Actually, I thought of one interesting thing you could do. You could modify Mozilla so anytime you looked up a URL, it attempted to do a Mojo search on that URL, and if it got the Mojo ID first, it would use Mojo to download it, or MNET to download it.
That's a good idea. Bram's project, BitTorrent, already has something very like that, which he'll demo sometime soon. It's a good idea because it removes the... Oh, yeah. Sorry about that. Don't stare too closely at it. It's a good idea. And I think there are lots of such good ideas that we can do.
How does MNET differentiate itself from the other distributed file shares? Which other distributed file shares? Okay.
They can have it.
BitTorrent isn't a distributed file share. I think I was discussing this with this gentleman over here about Freenet not being a distributed file store either, being more of a caching network, I think, is the description. So I really don't think there are too many other actual distributed file stores that are actually out there. There's certainly a lot of projects that are in various stages, but I think there are more research papers and less code actually available, like OceanStor and Farsight, and there's like a dozen of them now. That's the answer.
Okay, we have time for two more questions.
Another neat idea that occurred to me, maybe this has already been thought of before, is that this would make a good, highly available, reliable backup system for very large networks, very large systems. We have lots of servers. Have you given any thought to running this as a way to do backups?
Yes, this actually that is one of the projects, or that's the one of the commercial applications that Evil Geniuses has been trying to sell the software for, is enterprise backups. You install the brokers on a large number of computers in the organization and then use it to store the data. It's I think in that type of situation where the computers stick around and don't there isn't a high amount of churn, it's very reliable. In the actual Mojo Nation system, the number of nodes that were constantly around was not extremely high, and all of the mechanisms in the software for preferring reliable nodes really worked, and pretty much everything ended up on any server that was always up. So these types of systems don't really lend themselves as well to the high churn type of thing, but in a more stable sort of enterprise environment, it's definitely much more stable. And there's also provisions for moving data off of machines that were being planned planned to be taken down.
I have a sort of futuristic question to ask him over here. And this sort of emphasizes the cooperative nature of hacking, if such a thing exists. When do you see, and what do you see as being the major issues in making some of these different file sharing systems compatible with each other so that they can interoperate in some way?
Compatible with each other?
Yes.
In what way?
Like so that if I'm using, like, let's say I'm a diehard and I still run Mojo Nation, and I have friends who are running MNET, and we want to share files between us. What are the major, other than the obvious, you know, data format translation issues, what are the issues that you foresee? And do you ever see this sort of thing happening?
It would help if we documented the formats and things like that, then people could choose to implement, it would be easier for them if they wanted to implement our version, or to form gateways between them and things like that. There's a great project called Tristero, T-R-I-S-T-E-R-E-O, which is making some progress at defining XML RPC APIs that different peer-to-peer systems can all speak. So that's a good idea. If if someone out there really wants to, you can jump in and I'll tell you everything you want to know.
You guys ready with the demo?
Is it working?
Yeah, it might work.
So if it's working now, we'll demo it now. But if not, we're going to bring the next speaker on. And if we have time at the end of the day, you can see the MNET demo then.
It's going to take me another
Thank you.